This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires.
Swing and a miss. Thankfully, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
We are the Diehards right here, Sports Map Radio Network. No Anthony Pepe this evening. It seems to be the Tuesday Pepe night off here on the
We've upgraded.
It's okay, though. I'll take it. Not going to lie to you, Bobby Kaprinski, Basketball Insiders, alongside. But I'm not going to lie to you. Today, I had a horrible night's sleep last night. Like, horrible. One of those nights, it was 2:30. I'm looking at the clock like, if I fall asleep now, I can still get 5 hours. One of those nights. So I'm miserable. I'm exhausted. And wasn't looking forward to tonight's game at all. I'm surprised the Celtics are still in it. But Pep checked in with me and said, you're good for tonight. And I was 50-50. Like, I'm one of those guys, I never call out of work, whether it's my full-time job, this job, WEI, never call out. But I was ready to call out tonight. I got to tell you, I'm glad I didn't. Once I get here, the sort of motivation, the adrenaline starts going. But I'm also glad I didn't because, again, you know, this is the Tuesday thing now. I wish Pep and the Sports Map Radio Network would make it official. We need the voice guy to make us some, you know, some promos. And if we're going to do the Gilroy and Bobby show, let's do it and make it official.
Yeah, see, we need these reps. So thank God that you're playing sick right now.
Yeah.
Coming through as we build this chemistry and get this off the ground. And then I think it's like when you don't want to go to the gym – and you force yourself to, and mm-hmm. you feel fantastic afterwards, and you feel so like you've rewarded yourself for going, and you're grateful that you pushed through it.
Yep.
That's what I'm hoping this show does for you tonight.
I think it will, and you know, as long as the Celtics hang tough here and they keep this thing within striking distance, I'm going to be alert, I'm going to be ready to go, and I'm going to be ready to get after it.
So I'm prepared to keep you away from the screen then.
You probably should.
We're only in the first quarter.
And the Celtics have blown their original 8-point lead. Now they're down by 3 with a minute and 40 to go in the first. My name is Patrick Gilroy. His name is Bobby Kaprinski. We are the Diehards right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. We come back, I want to get into the Kyrie topic of conversation happening here in Boston and, of course, across the globe. Kyrie Irving, massive douche or visionary? We'll talk about that when we come back. Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
We are the Diehards right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. No Anthony Pepe this evening. Friends are myself, Patrick Gilroy, alongside Bobby Kaprinski from Basketball Insiders. Talking some hoops with you guys tonight. We'll get into some other stuff as the show moves along. But basketball really has been the dominant conversation, not just here in New England and in Boston, but I think across the country over the last 4 or 5 days, Bobby. You know, this Celtics-Nets series, it's 7-2. The Celtics are down 3 starters as the 7th seed. They got no chance to win the series. But the Kyrie Irving narrative has really propelled this series to the front of the sports conversation. Kyrie got it going early on in Brooklyn, talking about before the series started, as it was going to Boston, talking about, you know, he hopes the fans keep the racial, subtle racial undertone sort of to themselves and keep it all basketball and yada, yada, yada. Really doing Boston a major disservice, in my opinion. And again, you know, this is, I know it's a national network, and I hope that people across the country hear this, because I don't think it's fair that Boston continuously gets singled out as this massively racist town as compared to, I don't know, other major sports cities across the country. This stuff happens. Like, it happens, and it's happened across the NBA, Bobby, in 4 or 5 different places over the last week. And you know, even when you look at what took place here in Boston the other night with the water bottle getting thrown at Kyrie's direction, it didn't hit Kyrie, but thrown in his direction. I don't know how we go from Jackass fan upset that the Celtics got their asses kicked and Kyrie put on a show in front of them to this is a racist sort of thing that happened in Boston. I don't know how you make those two sort of comparisons. And I'll tell you this, I know this from being at the Garden over the last 20 years as a fan, as a member of the media. I can tell you 100% for sure, if Kyrie's skin color were white and everything played out exactly how it had post-Isaiah Thomas trade, Kyrie Irving coming to Boston, everything's identical, that water bottle's getting thrown at Kyrie no matter what his skin color is.
I definitely agree with that. I also want to acknowledge that what Kyrie said was accurate. Boston has earned its reputation. It doesn't mean that racism is confined to Massachusetts, but it still goes on here, and there's a litany of examples, sports world and the general public, who will tell you about their experiences in Boston, Massachusetts. So it has earned its reputation. No, it doesn't stand alone. And who cares? Is it the worst in regards to racism or not? You know, it's not a contest where you want to do a power rankings of. I will also say this. Kyrie Irving consistently has a problem where he delivers the right message the wrong way. And so I was glad, or at least agreed with Jaylen Brown, when he then came to Boston's aid on Friday prior to game three, saying that there was a clear agenda behind what Kyrie was saying, while also being able to pivot and say the way that he went about delivering his message, which is often something that Kyrie is not particularly effective at, was wrong. But the message was right. And what's more important, because like Jaylen Brown said, Boston, we as a Massachusetts native have a lot of work to do. So we shouldn't shy away from the conversation and what all these people are trying to say. We shouldn't look to deflect by saying, look at all the other fans in buildings who are doing these things in different cities. You know, again, like a fan in New York spit on Trae Young. That's vile and repulsive.
Sure.
So,
but does that have anything to do with his color?
Well, so I agreed with you, and that's the first thing I said was that
right.
If Kyrie Irving was white and it was the only thing you changed about the circumstances, the fans would be furious with him and all that.
Yes.
Another component, and this is general and not specific to Boston now, is that there is this ugly undercurrent of where you watch a sport like basketball where the athletes are predominantly black and it's an entertainment, and a lot of the fans, when you look around buildings, are white. And there's just an ugly side to it. And there has always been fans who go too far. They don't make up the majority in any building by any means. But the best athletes, they hear this stuff when they're kids. They hear it in high school. They hear it in college. And they hear it in the pros. And there's fans who just go way over the line. Now, that's a global issue right there. But I think for Bostonians, Massachusetts natives, and New Englanders, that you need to think, what do you want to accomplish out of this conversation? And as painful as it is, as much as some people hear it and they want to run away from the discussion altogether, that the most important and effective thing you can do is fixate on the reality that we as a city and as a territory have a lot to address and clean up. And it's not going to change if majority of the people not responsible for carrying out racist actions and behaviors aren't willing to address it.
All right, Bobby, a couple things here. So, first of all, I don't understand why the narrative never changes. And I'll give you a prime example. You go back a decade or so, Kevin Garnett was reluctant to come here. The Celtics tried trading for Kevin Garnett prior to pulling the trigger on the Ray Allen, Jeff Green, number 5 overall trade. And KG said, because remember, he didn't have the no trade at that time, but Danny Ainge was insistent upon a contract extension. He had 1 year left in his deal. And KG said, look, I guess I'll come, but I'm not signing an extension with you. And the Celtics were unwilling to give Al Jefferson and the farm for 1 year of Kevin Garnett. Kevin Garnett then decides to come here after the Celtics pulled the trigger on the Ray Allen deal and signed the extension. And by the time Kevin Garnett leaves Boston, Kevin Garnett says, I bleed green. If you cut me open, my blood is now green. I promise you, as a Hall of Fame inductee, he's going in as a member of the Celtics, even though he only spent one-third of his career here. So you got Kevin Garnett. You got Paul Pierce. Go to other sports. You got Rodney Harrison. You've got David Ortiz. You've got Manny Ramirez. You've got all these players that are greats in their respective sports. and they think Boston is a fabulous place to play. They've never said anything about racist undertones here. As a matter of fact, you know, look at a guy like Kyrie Irving, who had nothing but his ass kissed here for the couple of years that he was here. He's anything but outspoken. We know that this is a guy that's not shy when it comes to a microphone in front of his face. So show me, Bobby, you know, one time that Kyrie complained about a racist action that took place against him during his time in Boston. Because if it's not firsthand, all he's doing is continuing to do Boston a major disservice by bringing up things that happened 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, D. Brown, 1991. Now, all that stuff that happened, Bill Russell having issues back in the 1950s and 60s. Yes, those sins this town is guilty of. There's no getting around that. But how do you graduate past that if these guys continue to use Boston's racist sort of reputation as a crutch?
So Boston has come a long way. There's also the reality that while Kyrie was here, DeMarcus Cousins is sitting on the bench and a fan called him the N-word. So it's just one of those realities where it's come a long way. It still has a long ways to go. It doesn't mean that it's exclusive in Massachusetts or New England or that it's worse here than anywhere else you can go on the map. But again, it doesn't get better if people won't just sit down and focus on the most important component of this discussion. So Kyrie has even said when he was wearing the green and white, didn't experience a single racial incident. But he did while he was a member of the Cleveland Cavaliers. I don't know if he said he has as a member of the Brooklyn Nets or not, but I wouldn't be surprised if he has. And he might feel that the fan throwing the water bottle was racially motivated. Now, you and I can say our piece on that, but as two white men, it's not our place. If Kyrie Irving feels that was racist, he's got a lot more weight behind it. You know, my job is to listen more than anything else.
But can you listen to BS? Because what Kyrie did was BS. And I think that was Jaylen Brown did a great job of articulating the BS that came out of Kyrie's mouth. But Kyrie tried to change the narrative of this series before going back to Boston because he knew what he was in for. Remember, when he was a member of the Celtics, it took him, I think, his first three games, he didn't actually go back and play in Cleveland. There was always a different ailment.
Yeah, he's got a history of
that. Before going back and facing what he was going to be facing from those Cleveland fans because he had told them that he wanted to be a Cavalier for life. You know, these are the things that Kyrie's done. And then he blames other people for the way that he feels. And it's more of an insecurity thing, in my opinion, when it comes to Kyrie. That's why Kyrie sort of is the way he is. For somebody who is such an alpha and as dominant at his sport as he is, to me, it screams of insecurity. But to the rest of the country, to the people that don't live here, don't breathe it, don't listen to every word these athletes have to say, it's damning. Because in listening to people across the country talk about this narrative over the last 3 or 4 days, the assumption is Kyrie Irving faced racism as a member of the Boston Celtics. And that's what Kyrie tried to plant, in my opinion.
Respectfully, I don't think people think that about his time in Boston. I think a lot of people are aware that it's when you come here to play for these teams, you're treated pretty well, especially as one of the top athletes on a team. But when you come here as a visitor, different story. And so with Kyrie and the water bottle, you know, I think that was a stupid, drunken 21-year-old, and he deserves to be arrested and prosecuted, in my opinion. When it comes to, was it racially motivated? No. I think that he's one of these fans who hates him because he kind of blew up what people thought was a team on the verge of becoming a dynasty. And he promised, you know, if you'll have me back, I'm going to re-sign. He did the commercial with his father where he said, I want to be the reason no one wears number 11 here ever again. And they're playing on the Garden Parquet. So the fans have a right to hate him for that. And even his father recently said that he messed up when it came to how he approached it and handled it. But I just think that as a city, that Boston needs to be better.
So, again, I'm not going to sit here and debate that. I will say this, and again, you know, we'll continue this on the other side as well, because this is a conversation that requires more than a 15-minute sort of dedication to it. I don't know. Did you play athletics in high school? Did you play sports in high school? What did you play?
So I played basketball and football.
Okay, so I played basketball as well. I played football for a couple of years, but predominantly basketball. I played 1 year of college. Was never the best player on my team. Always, I'm going to say 8 through 10, somewhere in there. There were some games I didn't play. Some games I got to start. But I was always the hardworking guy that always found a place on a team. And to this day, I still play regularly. So I've got friends and family that live in more inner city places than where I live. And I know the parks that have the lights at night, and I know where to go to catch a good game if I feel like I need it. And sometimes I'm the only white person that shows up there. And that's okay. Most of the time, at least at the beginning, my experience is the same, and I never took it as something that was a racist sort of undertone to me. But maybe I should have, because as the lone white guy, I'd be the last guy picked, even if I had next. All right? And that's the way it goes until you earn your respect. I never thought that that was a racist statement against me because I was white. I just thought it was the way it was because this is basketball. And if I can accept that as a 41-year-old guy, then maybe these guys that earn $35 million a year to put on this entertainment, they don't want to be a part of the circus. They don't want to be an entertainer. But that's exactly what they are, and that's exactly what justifies their salary. And I don't mean to treat them as animals, but what I'm saying is people go to the circus because it provides entertainment, and it's worth $50 a seat if you go, right? That's what you've said as a consumer. I'm going to pay $50 a seat, and I'm going to go watch the circus. Same thing with baseball, same thing with football, same thing with basketball. It's entertainment. And they're the first ones to say that we're entertainers, but they're the last ones that want to be treated like entertainers.
Well, I would still say that there's a line that can be crossed and too often is.
Yeah, it is the Sports Map Radio Network. My name is Patrick Gilroy. His name is Bobby Kravinsky. We come back, we'll continue this conversation. It's not just a Boston thing, it's a global thing. Kyrie Irving brought it to the forefront, and now I think we're going to try to make some sense out of it right here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
We are the Diehards. This is the Sports Map Radio Network, and I want you guys to think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices. Every day. Patrick Gilroy, Bobby Kravinsky hanging out here until 10 p.m. Eastern time, talking about the NBA, talking about this conversation that unfortunately has once again dominated what I think has been a pretty damn entertaining round one of the playoffs. Instead of sitting here talking about the basketball on the floor, Bobby, we're talking about racism, and we're talking about unfortunate incidents that have happened not just in Boston, but in different places across this country in the first 10 days of the NBA playoffs. And I know that Boston has earned its reputation because of things that have happened in years past, and I get all that. And we can have our own personal feelings about Kyrie Irving's motivation for bringing it back into the forefront of the conversation. But when you look at the individual incidents that have happened, whether it's the popcorn, the spitting incident, the fan last night in Washington that ran out onto the floor and tried to grab the net, everything that's happened, there is sort of a generalization that's, I think, taken place in the country over the last 24, 36 hours, saying, well, people have been locked up in their houses, that they haven't gone anywhere. This is the first time they're out amongst 20,000 like-minded people, and maybe they just forgot how to behave. Is there something to that, or is that taking the easy way out?
It's both. There's something to it. It is taking the easy way out. It's trying to soften the blow, in my opinion. But at the same time, I'm with that group of people who then adds to the sentence, stay home. If you're not ready to handle it, and maybe you don't know until you get into that environment, maybe you still don't know until you get a couple of beverages in you and you start having some confidence that wasn't there before. Know how to handle it. Do just a modicum of critical thinking. The fan who runs on the court in Washington last night and jumps to see if he can touch the backboard. Why? Just some critical thinking. I mentioned in the first segment the fan who spit on Trae Young. There's got to be some level of decency and morality here. The fan who throws the water bottle, you deserve to be prosecuted. You deserve to be arrested.
Does he deserve 10 years in jail?
No, but I don't think that's what he's going to get. I haven't seen a single thing saying he's about to get a decade in jail.
No, 10 years in jail is the maximum prosecutable sort of a sentence for this crime. And so that's to me, the fact that they're charging him with assault with a deadly weapon is part of my problem here. Look, I think he should have spent the night in jail. I think he should get, you know, maybe a couple of weeks in jail as a sentence and a year probation so other people don't do it. Use it as a deterrent. But you're a basketball fan. Go back, watch the YouTube videos all the way through the 80s. Teams win a championship. Teams win a big series in the semis and the conference finals. The fans storm the floor. As recently as 3 years ago, there's a great YouTube video of the Pelicans, and a guy that had front row seats was wearing a Pelicans warm-up suit, and he went out there and started shooting around with the team. And security comes over after he's taken like four jump shots, and the ball boys are giving him the ball. Like he's, oh, did we sign this guy to a 10-day contract? And security comes over and just walks him back to his seat and sort of laughs at it and says, you know, man, you can't do that. You got to sit here. So when did we take the fun out of it? And I don't mean to say spitting is fun or throwing a water bottle is fun, but when did it go from these guys are rabid sports fans, they had one too many drinks, they made a mistake, to we're gonna persecute this person forever and label them a racist for what they've done just because 90% of the NBA population happens to be African American?
Well, so context is king, where the fan who jumped into the layup line and he's stretching amongst
all
the players.
Yeah, you saw this. You know this.
That's gold.
Yep.
There's no harm. There's no foul. It is before the game. When in the middle of a play, someone runs onto the court and sees if they can get backboard, that is dangerous and stupid. When a fan, you know, spits on someone or throws a water bottle or pours popcorn on Russell Westbrook's head as he limps down the tunnel, you know, there's context matters. And so there is a clear right and wrong, just like with the rooting aspect of being a fan. These players have dealt with a lot their whole lives, and so they are just fine with being booed and taunted. But there is still a line that can be crossed. And so, like I said, there needs to be some manner of respect for the fact that these are fellow human beings. They're not just entertainers and circus animals. You can't be treating them like that. You have to treat them with kindness, compassion, consideration, even while booing, because they are fellow humans. They're not animals.
Right. They are human beings. They're not animals. They are entertainers.
And by the way, that doesn't justify treating animals like that either.
No, I get it.
Just explicitly state that in there.
Way to throw that in there.
I didn't want anyone to run with, well, he's saying this.
The PETA people are listening. So, yeah. I get it, Bobby, and I'm with you for the most part. But I don't know. Maybe I'm an old man. I got brought up in a generation where you hate the Lakers. You hate the Sixers. I had no use for the Jordan Bulls. And I've come on this program before last year when the Michael Jordan documentary came out. And I said one of my biggest regrets as a young sports fan was not appreciating Michael when I got to watch him in his prime. I learned to love Michael as a member of the Wizards because suddenly I was mature enough to appreciate what he was accomplishing, 38 to 41 years old, with the knees swelling up every night and getting them drained consistently and him still putting up 23, 24 points a night. I was blown away by that, and I fell in love with Michael at the same time that most Michael Jordan fans started to shy away from the affection for Michael because he looked almost human as a member of the Wizards. But I hated him. I had no use for him. He was consistently in the way. Back before Reggie Lewis passed away, it was always the best shooting guards in the Eastern Conference. Michael's one, Reggie's two. So I learned to hate him. I learned to hate the Sixers. I learned to hate the Lakers, whether it was from my father, my grandfather, growing up through osmosis. You hated the competition. And I feel like the crunchy old guy now that gets offended when, you know, Marcus Smart helps Kevin Durant up off the floor after a hard foul. What's the point of the hard foul if you're going to help the guy up?
Yeah, there's a lot of buddy-buddy, and people don't like it. I think it's just, it's a new reality where these guys, for the most part, they've grown up playing against each other when they got to some level that was well before the NBA. So with AAU and the travel circuit now, there is a relationship in a lot of cases. One of the stories that I remember is that when Michael Olakande was picked players in that draft class were stunned because they didn't know who he was. And he was like the only lottery pick that they weren't familiar with.
Candyman reference. Bobby Kravinsky. That's what you're here for. The Candyman reference. Go Clippers. My name is Patrick Gilroy. His name is Bobby Kravinsky. We've talked a lot about fans really crushing these players with racism and whatnot. But what about players insulting the fans by stepping on the logo? Talk about that when we come back. We are the Diehards.
Bust it.
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
It is the Diehards right here on the SportsMap Radio Network. No Anthony Pepe this evening. Patrick Gilroy sitting in alongside Bobby Kravinsky from Basketball Insiders sitting here. Minute to go in the first half, Bobby. Celtics trailing Brooklyn in Brooklyn in an elimination game, 56-49. Kyrie Irving at the line. Is it surprising to you that Boston has hung tough in this first half, or do you sort of expect them to hang tough and eventually sort of allow Brooklyn to pull away in the second half?
I'm surprised. Jabari Parker has the most points on the team. He's got 11. Jason Tatum has 9. So I'm definitely surprised that they're still in this right now in the first half. But also, I'm just waiting for Brooklyn to turn this game into a blowout.
Yeah. And you know, it was a hard enough sort of assignment going up against Brooklyn, less Jaylen Brown. So you're down one of your starters going into the series. And by the time you hit game four, you're down three of your starters with no Rob Williams and, of course, no Kemba Walker. And for the Celtics to have even had a chance to extend this to six games or seven games, or at least put a scare into Brooklyn without Jaylen Brown, they needed Kemba to step up and be that legitimate number two and be the Kemba that he was all those years when he played in Charlotte. It hasn't happened here, and it hasn't happened for Kemba really consistently since he's been a member of the Celtics. He's been up and down, started off great, made the All-Star team and whatnot. Last year was pretty good in the bubble, even though he was battling the knee injury. But it's disheartening to Celtics fans to look at Kemba, look at the contract, and know that based on his injury and the type of injury that it is, he would be the aberration, not the rule, if he were ever able to come back and be even 90% of his former self.
Yeah, it's a shame how quickly it flips where he started in the All-Star game last year.
Yep.
Now he has one of the worst contracts in basketball, and it's a question of, can the Celtics actually move on from him? I'm of the mindset that no contract in the NBA is currently an albatross. We saw Al Horford's deal get moved, and somehow they got Danny Green from it on an expiring contract.
Yeah.
So I think if the Celtics really want to, they can part with enough draft capital to move off Kemba's deal this summer. And they probably are highly motivated to do so. Whether they're willing to pay the price might be a different story. But with Kemba, like we've been saying, undersized point guards in this league, there's some special sauce that allows them to create the necessary separation to score. And for him, it's the torque that he puts onto his knees to be able to stop on a dime, pull the ball back as the defender breaks his ankles and falls to the floor like McGee on Pittsburgh
yep.
in the Big East tournament,
yep.
and Kemba nails the jumper. That has been a huge element of Kemba's success and what makes him such a potent scorer. But the more and more you do that, there comes a time where all of a sudden you find yourself on the back nine of your career. And so for Kemba, I'm not even saying that he regrets it or he should, but going to play for the Olympic team, coming off of a contract year, that took a rather large toll on his body. And so to go from that type of a season into the Olympic qualifiers, into the next season, into playing heavy minutes at the All-Star game, even with the long break when the season paused until it resumed in Orlando, it didn't do him that much good and heal his body, specifically his knees, enough. And so now the Celtics, they've sat him out back-to-backs all year. They waited a long time to bring him back into the fold this season. But unfortunately, he gave him 5 games, I believe, before having to sit one out, including the postseason play-in game against the Wizards. And so I actually thought he played pretty well Friday against Brooklyn, where it wasn't scoring, although he hit a clutch bucket towards
the end. He did
everything
else, though.
It was the rebounding
yep.
and the energy and all that. But you see it where it was just obvious that it was for the best not to play him tonight.
So let me ask you a fundamental question then, because the optimist in you, I think, thinks that they can move on from that contract if the Celtics want to, if Danny Ainge decides that he wants to suck it up and, you know, I made a mistake here, and move on from Kemba Walker. You brought up Al Horford, and I don't think Al's got that much left in the tank. He might be 60% of the guy he was his final year in Boston at this stage in his career. But he's also got an equally bad contract with, I believe, 2 years left on the deal. And there was rumors this year that maybe if Al got bought out that he would get brought back to Boston because he understood the offense. And, you know, he's an adequate replacement in the half-court set for a guy like Gordon Hayward, somebody you can run the offense through. So would the Celtics be better off next year? I'm not talking long-term. But next year, if they moved on from Kemba Walker, were able to bring Al Horford back, but because of that, they keep Marcus Smart in the fold, and they keep Evan Fournier in the fold, and Fournier and Smart are your starting backcourt next year. Not nearly as explosive, but maybe more reliable?
I think that it's probably as good as the Celtics can do. They might be able to get Kristaps Porzingis. I think they should steer clear of that option. It's a shame because he was someone who came in with all the talent in the world. But being as tall as he is, as a seven-footer, when you sustain a serious lower body injury,
yep.
He's just not moving the same. He gets challenged more in today's game, mobily, defensively. And offensively, he should have an easy time fitting in next to Luka, but he doesn't always seem comfortable out there. Maybe that's more to do with when you're getting embarrassed defensively, it just plays with you mentally at the other end, too. That's probably, there's a lot of truth there. But bottom line is I wouldn't want Porzingis, even if it was him for Kemba straight up. When it comes to Al Horford, on one hand, it makes a lot of sense. On the other hand, it's clunky to have him and Robert Williams, who I get we could use another big in Boston because you just can't depend on Robert Williams to stay healthy. But they've also got Tristan Thompson. We've talked about at $9 million. That's another first-round pick to move on from that deal.
Yep.
I doubt it happens. He's a different component than Robert Williams. I think he does bring a leadership element with championship pedigree. So Al Horford for Kemba Walker makes a lot of sense, but at the same time, you are losing a scorer who is starting to accept, I need to be complimentary to the Jays, where even when he came here, I think he wanted to lift them up and amplify their game, but also had more to his performance and what he could contribute. Now, unfortunately, it has dropped off dramatically. So I think they might end up being better off keeping Kemba than bringing in Al Horford, as much as I would like to see Horford back. I think he would like to come back. His sister has said she was hoping that this is how it would play out.
Anna likes to party in Boston.
And so when it comes to how this all unfolds, there are other elements to the game, you know, rebounding, defense, all these things. Al Horford can still play. But then again, the most important part of the game is scoring. And so it might just make more sense to keep Kemba than Al Horford because he really doesn't help them out financially to make that swap.
Is there a Derrick Rose-ish Kemba 2.0 within Kemba Walker's body at this stage in his career?
Well, keep in mind that Derrick Rose, until this last game against, or these last two games against Atlanta, was coming off the bench. So if Kemba wants to come off the bench and help out in that type of a role,
and if that allows him to, if coming off the bench allows him to play every night, that's something I think you might be able to talk him into, because I don't think he enjoyed being a part-time member of the team this year.
But the difference is that Derrick Rose was making $7 million. Kemba's on a max deal.
Yeah, and that's a problem. That's a problem. It's a big problem. It's a problem Danny Ainge is going to have to address in this offseason. It's going to be a fascinating offseason for the Celtics, but for other teams as well. And you look at a team like the Philadelphia 76ers that had all the components to be successful over the last handful of years, but really were never able to pull it together. They didn't have the right surrounding cast, especially the last 2 years or so. Prior years before that, when it was the J.J. Redick show, you know, around Joel Embiid, around Ben Simmons, that was great for them, because having those wide-open shooters, guys that could can the three, really complemented those players. But it seemed like they got away from what made that team work. And they also had to deal with significant knee injuries with Joel Embiid and really nurse him back to somewhat health. And it's ironic that he's, you know, dealing with the injuries once again at this stage in the playoffs. But they should be the model for the Celtics, a team that has disappointed early on in the playoffs over the last few years, retooled on the fly, brought in a different coach, a different general manager, but was able to keep their core stars together and build the right complementary pieces around them, really helped elevate, I think, Philadelphia to a position this year that a lot of pundits around the league weren't sure they could sort of recapture this sort of glory with those two guys as their 1-2 punch.
Well, you're right. And what happened there is the franchise got reinvigorated by bringing in Doc Rivers and Daryl Morey. Daryl Morey did what Danny Ainge needs to do, and that's he fortified the rotation, bringing in most notably Seth Curry.
Yep.
And then the impact that Doc Rivers has had on Tobias Harris, who at one point also looked like one of the worst contracts in the league. But Doc Rivers is the Tobias Harris whisperer, where he just gets the most out of that guy. And so he is an integral part of that team and kind of living up to the contract. Not all max players are created equal. So what's happened in Philadelphia is a great blueprint for the Celtics to follow. By the same token, there were some missteps that they should take note of, too. I think that Daryl Morey wanted to bring James Harden to Philly, and there were players he wouldn't part with to get that deal done. Ben Simmons, not on that list, and it ended up costing them. Where I've always said, if they're willing to trade Ben Simmons, they can do better than James Harden, given the age and the contract and all that. But nonetheless, where is that pivot point going to be? They could have gotten Kyle Lowry, and there were some guys that they probably should have been willing to give up that they weren't. So when it comes to the Celtics, I also think they need to be leery of, okay, what they did, flipping out bad contracts, bringing in key role players, that stuff we should look to emulate, but we also need to study their missteps.
But don't you have to be a title contender to bring in those key role players at reduced contracts? But, you know, even with the Celtics going back to 2008, look at the team that Danny Ainge sort of built around the big three. I'll never forget reading Bob Ryan's piece where Bob Ryan completely chastised Danny Ange for giving away the farm. And Bob Ryan, by the way, Hall of Fame basketball writer, my favorite basketball writer in my lifetime. He's been on my show 100 times over the years, and to me, there is no better person on the planet to have a basketball conversation with than Bob Ryan. All that being said, Bob Ryan will be the first one to tell you that he was 100% wrong in the article that he penned back in 2008 when the Celtics brought in Kevin Garnett. He said, look, they're going to have the best big three in the league, but they're going to have the worst bench in the league. He said, you have players 4 through 12. At the time, rosters were only 12 players. They're going to be the worst in the league. They managed to bring in guys like James Posey, even guys like Sam Cassell, P.J. Brown later on, but Big Baby stepped up, and you had Kendrick Perkins really graduate. Nobody knew that Rondo was going to take that next step in his progression in year two. But being surrounded by that sort of premier talent elevated guys like Big Baby and Rajon Rondo into the key contributors they wound up becoming. You look at this Celtics team, and look, even if everything broke their way and they forced a game six in this series down 3/5 of their starters, I'm sorry, but any series in the playoffs where guys like Peyton Pritchard, Aaron Nesmith, and Jabari Parker are playing significant, meaningful minutes, it means you built your team incorrectly going into the year.
Yes, because they did. They were relying on guys like Jeff Teague, for instance, and clearly didn't work out. They also decided to hold a spot open for Romeo Langford to join the rotation. So until he was able to come back, that spot was not occupied. Aaron Nesmith wasn't ready to go until, interestingly enough, right around the trade deadline is when he started to emerge and become a legitimate rotation player. And even then, it was a gradual process for him, which is understandable, especially given the nature of this season. And so what happened was the Celtics, they certainly got it wrong when it came to building out the rotation around the Jays. I also think that they're in a situation now where they're going up against the title contender. And for my money, the Nets, as long as their big three stay healthy, they're going to be the last team standing this year. That's my prediction. And when it comes to the Celtics, they're down three starters, like you've been saying. So you wanted them to show fight and compete and Celtic pride and all that. And since this series got back to Boston, and even now on the road in Brooklyn, where odds are their season's about to be over, they have done so.
Yeah, they've shown some compete level and some Celtic pride. There's no doubt about that. And the surprise of the series to me is a guy that I was ready to move on from most of the season. And Tristan Thompson has been the Tristan Thompson that I remember from the Celtics-Cavaliers battles a decade ago. All of a sudden, he seems reinvigorated. He's rejuvenated. And he's been that just pain in the ass under the offensive boards, making life a living hell for the opposition. And that's the guy that I couldn't stand when he was a member of the Cavaliers, and that's the guy that I would like to see here. I'm not naive enough to think that he's going to do that for an 82-game regular season. But if he could do it for 55, 60 games, I welcome him back with open arms.
There's 82-game players, and there's 16-game players. And Tristan Thompson, at this stage of his career, has basically said it, that he saves himself for the playoffs. And so this season, after the Cleveland, they didn't even get invited to the bubble in Orlando last year. So understandable that he comes back and he's rusty. He's starting to play better. Then we believe that he contracted COVID. He was out a long time in the health and safety protocols. But when he came back from that, immediately he was more effective in starting to play like Cleveland Cavaliers version of Tristan Thompson. So he really has been huge for this team.
We are the Diehards. This is the Sports Map Radio Network. His name is Bobby Kurinski from Basketball Insiders. My name is Patrick Gilroy. We have only got, I don't know, an hour and 15 minutes to go here, Bobby. Lots more to talk about, lots more to get to right here. We are the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
We are the Diehards. This is the Sports Map Radio Network. We're presented by our friends at Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Never forget that Rocket can. Always a good sign, Bobby. The first hour went by quickly. There was lots to get to, lots to talk about. And the conversation that we had about racism in Boston and across this country, I think we just scratched the surface of where that conversation needs to go. And the shame of it is, I feel like a lot of people that are in our position choose not to have the conversation. They stay away from it rather than tackle it. And I think that is a part of the problem with the dialogue moving forward.
Yeah. And so I just think there's a lot of elements to it. I would recommend that people focus on listening and also the most important part of the conversation.
And we'll get to more of that conversation in hour number two. We are the Diehards. His name is Bobby Kurinski. My name is Patrick Gilroy. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. When we come back, was there crimes against a leprechaun in Boston? We'll talk about that next. We are the Diehards.